Today on the PC Gamer Podcast, changes in leadership at EA. Could this mean a new era for one of gaming's biggest and most controversial publishers? I'm finally allowed to talk about The Elder Scrolls Online, plus MLG Dallas, SimCity, Richard Garriott, and more. Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode number 349 for the week of March 21st, 2013. I'm your host this week, contributing editor TJ Hafer. And across from me are several distinct sentient entities, including associate editor Omri Petit.
I'm OP.
Editor-in-chief Logan Decker.
I don't even know that I'm sentient anymore because I ate everything I ate yesterday came from Walgreens. So I don't know that I even qualify as a human being anymore.
We've all had those days.
You've been bumped down on the life form designation.
I still have those days. Grab a monster and some salted almonds from Walgreens and head into work. And also senior associate editor Tyler Wilde.
Hello. I don't think I'm sentient either. I didn't sleep enough last night because Logan keeps tweeting links to things that give me nightmares.
This is true.
He's just like, oh, check out this article on what would happen if all oxygen disappeared for like 5 seconds on Earth. Well, and it starts out like, all right, that sounds bad. And then it's like, you would explode. And
eardrums. I mean, yeah. What is that even like? If your eardrums explode, does a goo come out or?
I don't know.
I think it'd just be blood just spraying.
Just squirts out like a zit.
Exactly.
Like one that got really infected.
It starts small there, like, ow, my eardrums exploded. But then it gets down to like, well, since there's the water in your body is full of oxygen, you would basically just...
Right, all your cells explode too.
All your cells would explode. And also all the continents would sink into the earth because there's quite a bit of oxygen.
Right.
Right. A lot of stuff.
I hope there's a cream for that.
So basically, it's bad news all around. And that's what I dream about now.
The scariest...
Follow Logan Decker on Twitter.
Exactly.
You never want to sleep again.
If for some reason you're sleeping too much, it's a good way to solve that problem. So Heart of the Swarm has been out for about a week now, and this past weekend was the MLG Winter Championships in Dallas, which is kind of the biggest Heart of the Swarm competition that has gone on so far. I got to go check it out at the Barcraft in Berkeley, which was actually pretty awesome. There were like 60, 70 people there. It seemed like just watching StarCraft in the basement of a bar, which I think is awesome. The final came down to Flash, who's a really, really well-known player, against Life from Team StarTail. They're both Koreans. But the interesting thing was that a lot of the Zerg players who are pros were complaining about how Terran was overpowered, and then a Zerg ended up winning the tournament, which Blizzard has come out and said that nobody is even close to figuring out the expansion's mechanics yet.
What I took away from that is that he was fighting Life. Is that correct?
Right.
Wow. Taking on Life in StarCraft?
There's kind of a rivalry developing between these two players because Flash is known as the God of Brood War. So it's like God versus Life who wins. It's, you know.
How fast do you think pro players on Wings of Liberty got used to the mechanics?
It's really varied, and I think a lot of it has to do with practice time. You know, the ones that have had more practice time in the expansion, there's a player named Innovation who wasn't really that big of a name. He's a Terran player outside of Korea before this tournament, and players like Innovation, players like Parting, who were big into the beta and were playing a lot in the Heart of the Swarm beta, seem to be doing better than, you know, those that...
I like how some of these player names are just these general positive things that you wouldn't ever want to actually pitch yourself against. It's like, yeah, I'm going to be fighting Innovation today.
Yeah. Which is funny because he actually was not one of the more innovative players at the tournament.
Yeah. But. Well, watch out for Good Tidings. That guy's good.
There you go.
Versus Happy Holidays.
Yeah. So, SimCity. We've talked about SimCity a lot. This is
a lot
kind
to
of
talk about.
Yeah, this is kind of the next chapter in that. We won't spend too much time on it. We did hear it has sold 1.1 million copies, which is kind of a lot for any PC game.
That's staggering.
That's pretty big. And biggest SimCity launch ever, they say, which kind of is like, well, all right, yeah, I don't think SimCity 2000 sold 1.1 million box copies in 2 weeks, sure.
Right.
That makes sense. But still, it's a big number.
Right. It is.
So the most recent thing that has come out of this is EA is offering a free game to everyone who has purchased SimCity as kind of an apology. Is how they're presenting it for the server issues at launch, which seem to have... Tyler, you've played it more than I have, but they seem to have mostly cleared up at this
point. They're much better. Now and then I'll get kicked out of a server, but then realize it's because it just went down for a patch or something.
Yeah.
So as I'm shaking my fist, I go, oh, patch notes, okay.
So
it's not too bad now.
Yeah, they're offering some pretty big games, like Mass Effect 3 is on there, Dead Space 3, and
Battlefield 3.
Battlefield 3, of course, mm-hmm. it's the standard edition, so you could kind of say, well, they're also expecting you to buy a bunch of DLC with it, but
they executed this like free game redemption pretty well.
Yeah,
pretty quickly. I got the email and I went into Origin. There was the thing, and I clicked, and then a second later, I had to test that it worked, and they put that together. Some software engineers had to like really quickly jump on getting 1.1 million people a free game, and so hey, credit to them that worked.
Now the other funny thing is they just launched a customer appreciation sale, which is huge, kind of stuff you don't typically see on Origin. Prices cut on a lot of big games, and
we know how they feel about sales. So.
Most of them are the same games that they're offering for free as an apology to these customers.
It just reminds me of like some character from Friends or Seinfeld. Who just, you know who you think may probably means well, but just
and as soon as you think they've just sort of they're kind of turning things around, like the free game offer goes over well, they stumble over their other shoelace and Now, I mean, the way these things work, I'm assuming the sale was planned for a long time. It's not like they.
That's a fair assumption. Know.
Probably didn't put it together in a week. This kind of stuff takes all kinds of memos and sign-offs and design work for the thing. So I'm sure it wasn't just like, but still, like, look at how things look before you do them sometimes.
Yeah, it was a little bit awkward just in terms of, I don't know.
But it's still a sale, and the sale has a lot of great games on it right now.
It does.
So
there is that.
It's really cool to jump on and take a look.
I actually still did not own Battlefield 3, so I now own Battlefield 3.
And there you go.
Yeah. So I'm fairly happy with how that turned out. The other big news, though, is that the CEO of EA, John Riccitiello, I believe is how you pronounce his name, has stepped down. This was shortly before the kickoff of the customer appreciation sale. The statement he issued was, "My decision to leave EA is really all about my accountability for the shortcomings of our financial results this year, which have, it's been in the media that they haven't been great. It currently looks like we'll continue to come in at the low end of or slightly below the financial guidance we issued to the street, so to their investors. And we have fallen short of the internal operating plan we set 1 year ago, and for that, I am 100% accountable."
First note is calling Wall Street the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Can I start doing that too?
Can you say I grew up on the street if your dad was a stockbroker?
I'm from the streets.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. We issued to the street.
White collar families.
Yeah, from the street. I don't want to be mean-spirited or anything, but I know it's a contract thing, but... if only everybody in America could say that accountability meant that you'd still get paid for doing no work for the following 2 years. I'm sorry. I cannot interpret that as a moment of accountability. It is what it is, but.
Yeah. I mean, it implies that like what he's losing here is all the joy he gets out of being acting CEO, which. And he's forfeiting that joy of being CEO as his apology.
Right. As a shareholder, I would say, wow, somebody's really, making himself accountable if he says, this was in my contract, but You know, I didn't feel like I returned what you, you know, expected of me. You know, there was the Groupon guy, you know, not too long ago who was like, you know, I'm stepping down because I didn't make you the money that I promised I would. And, you know, I didn't know. That just kind of rubs me the wrong way. But it was definitely not a successful tenure.
No. Right. Not really.
Yeah, and he's saying this to shareholders. I mean, as far as accountability to customers, I mean, I don't think it's not really a big deal to us whether EA's results came in a little bit low, you know, but the fact that its business models aren't quite working for it, that's of interest to us, you know. I
mean, right, right.
It's one of the biggest publishers, and obviously it has to change if it's going to succeed.
Well, they're kind of, I mean, they're notorious, at least, you know, among, you know, the vocal segment of gamers online for kind of just acting like they don't really care what anyone says. They only care about your money. And it's kind of built up a reputation as this impersonal corporate entity that doesn't have the best, you know, the best, what's the word I'm looking for?
Doesn't have the best reputation. For sure.
Right. I mean,
And I got, you know, I always try to assume the best, but, you know, they don't make it easy, do they? I mean, it's just, I just remember, and this was before SimCity came out, you know, trying to install Crysis 3, and just I would click on the support link because it, you know, it told me I wasn't ready yet, and then it would say, well, yeah, okay, we'll get to you in 323 minutes.
Right.
And, you know, just stuff like that, and you just get tired of it over and over and over again, and...
Yeah, so we don't really know how much of that had anything to do with John Riccitiello, but I'll definitely be interested to see who they choose to bring on board and if after that change the public face of EA starts to change as well. Because I think anyone, you know, that listens to this podcast could probably agree EA has some great properties, and if they acted a little bit more, you know, less like a corporation and more like, you know, personable, that would be of benefit to the entire PC gaming sphere.
And no matter how much they piss me off as a gamer, as a company, you know, from time to time, I do not lose sight of the fact that, okay, well, you know what, EA brought, you know, okay, yeah, they didn't develop it directly, but they brought Mass Effect, you know, into my life, which is one of the most extraordinary gaming experiences I've ever had. Yeah.
They have lots of great series.
It's just unforgettable. I will remember it on my deathbed, how exciting and extraordinary that journey was. So there is that. I don't lose sight of that, you know. And I think like most gamers, I just want the company to do better. And, you know.
Yeah. Well, because things like Mass Effect, like there's a lot of different space for a lot of different kinds of games, but the Mass Effect kind of blockbuster games can't happen without EA money or without Activision money. So, you know, it's a trade-off. But yeah, we're definitely going to be paying close attention to that and keeping you guys posted about what's going on at EA. So I'm finally, at least since the last podcast, finally allowed to talk about Elder Scrolls Online. I went to go see it last week in Baltimore. We had about 2 hours of hands-on time with the Daggerfall Covenant starting area. So I wasn't allowed to play a Nord, unfortunately. And they gave a big presentation with a lot of reveals. We have like 3 huge articles on the site that break down pretty much everything from the event and kind of what I thought of it as an Elder Scrolls player. The question's kind of been looming, like, is this going to be another WoW clone that has Elder Scrolls stamped on it, or is it really an Elder Scrolls game? The answer's a little bit of both, but I thought, similar to what Evan did with Arma 3, I would just let you guys ask me whatever questions you have about it, since I've already covered quite a bit, you know, in the articles that we've done so far.
I'd say probably one of the most important questions that would linger on a lot of people's minds is how much freedom do you have to, you know, do what the Elder Scrolls has always allowed you to do and pretty much scorn the main story or main quest, as it were, straight away and let you just run off, just beeline straight into whatever you want to do in the world.
There's a little bit of that. Unfortunately, I mean, we didn't get to really range far afield because, honestly, one of the first things I do when I jump into an Elder Scrolls game is I just see, like, okay, if I keep going in this direction, what am I going to find?
Right.
I do know it's zone-based. We didn't really get to the edge. We did kind of like the starter island and then one other zone, so I'm not sure if it's going to be larger seamless areas divided up into zones or if there will be loading screens between them. But the quest flow is very much like an MMO where it kind of directs you from hub to hub, and there's like people at those hubs that want you to go do things for them.
The H word.
Yeah. So that's honestly one of the things I was a little bit iffy about with it is the way that when I'm playing Skyrim or Oblivion, I find most of my gameplay by just wandering around doing nothing in particular and stumbling onto it, whereas Elder Scrolls Online seems more like it wants to lead you to the content. Mm-hmm. There were some quests that I found just by trying to get to obscure areas of the map, but they aren't really... They're the exception rather than the rule.
That's kind of counterintuitive to me. I don't know why, but I would expect it to be the other way around, you know, like an open world.
Right, yeah. Right. It's level-based to some degree. I'm not sure if it'll be like Guild Wars where your level doesn't matter as much, but you clearly couldn't just go running off into any zone and start doing quests there because the monsters would probably kick your ass, whereas in Skyrim, you know, if you're a decent fighter, you're going to find enemies that are about your level of challenge no matter where you go. So
what was the deal with the first-person perspective? Because a while back we heard it will have one, but you won't see your arms and weapons.
So the official word we got was, yes, it's going in, and we needed to just make sure our animation rigs were in place. My personal theory is that no, it was not going to go in. They saw the backlash from it and backpedaled, but that's just speculation. Mm. Yeah, you will be able to play first person like Skyrim style where you see your hands or you see your staff or whatever. That will be supported. They say it still won't be the best idea if you're doing instance content or PvE or PvP, I mean, just because of the lowered field of view, and you want to be able to see what's behind you and stuff. But
I think the question really on everyone's minds is, will you be able to go bear bowling and roll wildlife down hills?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Tyler has the actual correct question.
Well, there are racial skill lines for each of the playable races, and it's a pretty good bet that the Nords will get some form of shouts for theirs. So we could see some Fus Roda bear bowling action going on.
Awesome.
Yes.
That's all I want to do. And I want to have an audience. And so that's why an MMO makes sense for bear bowling.
There you go. You
could make it a competition.
And here comes PETA.
Darn it.
It's my
Come
weekly
on,
RP
guys.
Sessions.
They were angry about StarCraft too.
Yeah,
they?
at the launch event
defending
Terrans for the ethical treatment of Zerg.
They had
a cute little Zergling on their pamphlets.
So were they making a joke or were they just trying to spread
their
message?
They were actually trying to be like legit like PETA spokespeople.
Wow.
Using StarCraft as a platform.
That's odd.
It's basically activist trolling. You know what
it
I mean?
Kinda
it's
was.
Like they want attention, and
I would have been actually impressed with them if they had researched the game and knew something about it besides Zerglings, which they kind of clearly didn't. I was unimpressed. Owl.jpg. So.
Language is really changing.
Yeah, there you go.
Did ZeniMax talk at length or reveal any more information about their planned endgame content?
They brought it up real briefly. Not in depth, no. Mm-hmm. Endgame PvP, Cyrodiil is basically a gigantic PvP zone with capturable keeps and stuff. So that's going to be a big part of the end game, I imagine. As far as dungeons and stuff, they didn't talk that much about it, or raids. There is a single-player-esque quest line where you're kind of the hero, as in previous Elder Scrolls games, which I thought was interesting. But no, they didn't really talk about group end game that much.
like to see something beyond just the whole, oh, your max level, go raid a giant, go kill a giant dragon in a cave, or go kill other players in a castle.
You will be able to go, they did say, play through, once you hit level 50 of your faction's area, you'll be able to go play through the other two faction areas, which will be leveled up to level 50 to match you, so you don't have to, like, make an elf character just to see all the elf content, but, yeah. So, that's about all they said about that.
Hmm. What was your favorite experience or thing, feature, idea being implemented?
The most like unexpected cool feature is actually the way the enemy AI works. There's a lot of synergy between groups of enemies, especially enemies that are of the same faction tag, where they can do stuff like throw oil on the ground and have the mage light it on fire, and they'll yell things to each other like flank them and stuff, so you can kind of get an idea of what they're gonna do. I'd say it's better than the enemy AI in previous Elder Scrolls games and probably most MMOs I've played. I was impressed with that. So Tyler, not that long ago, we talked about it on the podcast a couple weeks ago, interviewed space traveler Richard Garriott, Lord British, of course, about his new game. And there was a statement that came out of that interview that's been causing a little bit of a stir up on the interwebs lately. Tyler, do you want to fill us in or fill our listeners in?
Yeah, sure. It was a pretty long conversation I had with him. And he showed me the game, and we talked a lot. And one of the things he said in that conversation was, when you just say it alone, sounds can incite a lot of, and has incited some fervor, is, I believe the exact quote is, I think most game designers just really suck. And this wasn't just kind of a funny little aside that he was kind of making. He went on to explain quite a bit, actually. It was a pretty big part of our conversation, and Logan was there for part of that. And I felt it was a really interesting part of our conversation because he didn't just go, you know, I think everyone sucks. He went on to explain how there's systemic problems, he thinks, and how design talent is promoted in the games industry right now, and how he believes that... you know, back in the day, you'd have a programmer who was also the designer, or you'd have an artist who's also a game designer, and he thinks programmers and artists being close to the technical and like visual creative side of the work often make the best designers. Mm-hmm. That was his point. Whereas right now, he thinks a lot of times people become designers because they can't program and they're not great artists.
Guilty.
But they want to make games, right? And certainly this is true of some designers. They want to make games. They don't have those other skills, so they go into design, and he thinks that's just a flawed, you know, it's a flawed way to promote someone into design based on the fact that they want to make games, but they don't do these technical things. And so he explained that in a bit of depth. You know, I kind of nudged him after saying the whole most game designers really just suck thing, and it's like, well, that's, you know, that's a line for the headline, you know, to say, hey, you should probably definitely elaborate on that,
right?
Because, you know, you've said it, and now we want an explanation. And he did. He gave a pretty thorough explanation. And, of course, some people reported on my story about his explanation and just sort of went, Richard Garriott thinks game designers suck, and he's better than all of them. Which, true, that is something he said, and that I understand that came off as arrogant. Whether or not he goes on to explain his reasoning, it still was that statement.
Right.
But of course, the reasoning was the story, I think, because the story was actually started an interesting conversation in some places about, like, well, is this a problem?
Right.
Is this true? Does, you know, and this is coming from the creator of Ultima, so it's not coming from someone with no experience making games. I said, if PC gaming can be said to have founders, he's one of them. He made some of the first most influential games. So, and obviously that caught Richard Garriott's attention because people are saying all these things and other developers are responding, you know, sort of, oh, you think we suck. So he released a statement clarifying his position. It actually reiterates some of the stuff he told us.
Right.
His position really hasn't changed that much from what he explained to me in the interview and what he posted to Facebook. But he did say he felt he was taken out of context. He didn't specify if he thought we took him out of context or some people who reported on our story took him out of context. But either way, we wanted to, you know, acknowledge his follow-up clarification and also note that, you know, we feel our story definitely provided a lot of context, you know. Mm-hmm. He made the statement. I nudged him and gave him the opportunity to explain. He did. And we published the statement and his explanation. So it's really an interesting thing.
It rubbed me a bit the wrong way because I reached out to him and I said, hey, well, do you after he released his statement, because mm-hmm. he didn't contact us first. And
right.
I just wanted to say, hey, you know, would you like to clarify that, you know, because he said, you know, people were passing around the headline, you know, and just taking that as, you know, and running with it. And I was very proud of the story. And I said, do you want to clarify that this is, you know, that we provided the context in this story? You know, we gave you lots of room to explain, and you did. He did not, through his representative, he declined to comment. I totally get that because sometimes you just got to move on.
Just got to let it blow over.
Yeah, you don't want to do the thing where, you know, like you make a huge mistake, then you give some games away, and then you put them on sale.
Yeah.
And
that's what you want to avoid.
Like, yeah, you're just like, okay, let's just move on from this. But the way I see it, I mean, he did say just before that, he's like, I'm not saying, like, I'm this brilliant, you know, person who's better than everybody else. I think what he was getting at, he very deliberately threw a verbal grenade, and he knew it when he was doing it. You know, we talked about it. And the purpose was to say, I think that this systemically, this is not a great way for this industry to be moving forward. We need designers who are trained to be designers, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and that was a good argument. That was a valid argument. And I think it was a good one to make. He knows, I mean, obviously, in retrospect, the wording, you know, did not go over very well. But it was a way to draw attention to a problem. And when I, you know, looking at it through, viewing it through that lens, I look back and I think, you know, I think a lot of people were trying to get the attention of some of these developers and publishers when DLC was becoming popular. And to say, you know what, this may not be, you know, we have to be very careful how we go down this road or we could lose, you know, the faith that gamers have in us or their trust. You know, I'm not sure how much Google reflected on how much dropping Google Reader would affect its trust, the trust that, you know, Google users have in their services, because days later, they introduce a new service called Google Keep, where that it's sort of like a notebook. You see something on the web, oh, I want to keep that for later. You just click this button, and then it's uploaded to this service. But now people are saying, wait a minute, you just shut down Reader when I, you know, came to depend on it. And, you know, to Google's credit, they're giving you plenty of time and all that. But they said, we got used to this service and you shut it down. And now you're saying, oh, we've got this new service that's going to store all this information and be like a digital scrapbook. And people are going, wait a minute. You know, mm-hmm. So it would have been great if somebody had pulled a verbal grenade out and said, you know what? Other companies suck. They don't get it like we do. We, you know, when, you know, you could say Valve might be able to come out and say, we know how to do it right. Everyone else is doing it wrong. It's, you could be saying things that way because you just want to be an, I don't want to use a bad word.
Right.
An unpleasant person. Or you could just be trying to tell people, wake up, you know, this is something that is affecting the entire industry.
And I kind of read into his comments that they were rhetoric.
Right.
That it was him. I want to draw attention to this issue. And I'm just kind of, you know, I'm going to say, most game designers suck. Here's why. As like if he were on one side of a debate and the topic was, you know, are there systemic problems in, you know, and he was trying to make his argument really strong, he would say, well, I think you suck because, and I did try to get his tone across in the conclusion saying, you know, I don't think he was condemning all of his friends in the design world.
Exactly.
Why would he do that? And, you know, that would just be a bad move for anyone. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go out on Twitter and say, you know what, I think most editors on gaming sites are terrible. and really just mean that because I would lose a lot of friends if I really just meant that. If I were making an argument trying to say we all need to be better, and I think and hope that that's what he was doing. He was trying to say, and like you said sort of in your editorial responding a bit, that, you know, we want to believe he's an optimistic guy who thinks we as an industry can do better, and that's what he was trying to get at. And I tried to clarify that in the article, because obviously, like, this whole, his idea that, you know, a programmer or an artist is a better game designer than a lot of game designers promoted in other ways, well, that still exists. And right. I did kind of bring that up, but the conversation didn't really go there. But that certainly still exists. I mean, I just wrote an article today about, Gone Home, which looks really awesome. And then you have, like, indie teams, like, making FTL and Hotline Miami and stuff like that we loved last year. So
I think everybody would agree that the wording was unfortunate.
Sure.
Right? You know, but it was considered. You know, it didn't just, it wasn't sort of blurted out accidentally and then, oh, yeah, let's run with this one. It was a very considered statement. And, but everybody agrees the wording was unfortunate.
Right.
But I'll be super candid here. You know, there's like, you know, not too long ago when the website Polygon launched, you know, but their theme when they launched was, you know, press reset. Let's rethink, you know, what games writing is about. Now, you could read that in a number of ways. You could see it as the people behind Polygon saying, you know what, all games journalists suck and we're going to do it right. That's one way to look at it, and it's, in my opinion, rather negative. I didn't read it that way. I said, you know, I saw it as, hey, you know what? If you kind of want something different, something, you know, a little more evolved or whatever, or, you know, that's what we're trying to do for you here. You know, I saw it as a positive statement. This is what we're trying to do. This is what we're going for. Even though, yeah, it could come off as arrogant and prideful and like, oh, you think you're better than everyone else. Well, yeah, that is just one way to look at it. But I didn't. I saw it as, hey, you know what? We love this industry. We love games. We love writing. And we want to try something new. That's fantastic. So, you know, I feel it's unfortunate that this turned, you know, negative when, you know, it should be, you know, sort of, it's great to have him back, you know. It was amazing to sit in that room with somebody when... I remember when I was 12 years old playing, you know, Ultima, and I remember he was on the, when we got our Apple II computer, we got a free magazine subscription to Apple II magazine with it, and the first issue that I got had Richard Garriott on the cover, and I was like, and he had a cape on, it was awesome.
Ah. He always looks so cool. I love that picture of him with the fire behind him.
Oh, yeah,
that's great too.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and he's part of the reason why I have the career I have today. Yeah.
And
so,
then like later on, I remember I had played a bunch of Ultimas and playing Ultima Online, which was like really made a huge impact on well, all of PC gaming. I mean, MMOs. Wow, I was playing a MUD before that.
Yeah.
And I still think text-based MUDs are pretty cool. But playing that, I remember like there would always be these rumors going through the game like, oh, Lord British is playing and you can see him. You got to go here. He's in the game right now. And people would like spread rumors about where he was or wasn't.
Yeah.
And whether or not he was in the game and whether or not that was even really him or just a fake Lord British. And it was exciting. You would just kind of, I remember kind of a subset of friends who would just play the game to try to see Lord British. And like, that's how big he was. So if you didn't, you know, if you didn't play as many games in the 80s or like early 90s, like Lord British was... He was like a schoolyard name.
Right. Yeah.
Definitely. We really absolutely cared. And he's done so much to affect PC gaming.
Right.
So I really respect him. And he does have a platform to stand on when he makes these big statements.
Right.
Even if he doesn't always word them, great. But I will say I really appreciate a lot of the commenters on our article.
Definitely.
For you know, arguing it out in some cases.
Right.
But for reading the whole article and thinking about it, and there were a lot of insightful comments going over it rather than, you know, I mean, you could have a very reactionary sort of, well, screw that guy because he said that. But I actually saw much more, hey, you know, let's talk about this. What was he saying? And is it true?
There was great commentary.
Is it not true?
On that story.
If it's not true, where is he getting this
idea? There's a lot of examination and discussion.
So, yeah, and I saw that elsewhere on Twitter. And that's really cool. So that's great because that was the intention. As Logan mentioned, we don't ever intend to do like a takedown piece or just sensationalize something.
That's gross. We don't. No.
Yeah, I wasn't.
I'm not interested in that. That will not happen, you know, while I'm editor. It's just...
Right. We weren't trying to make him look bad. He just said something interesting.
And right.
Like, it's our job when someone says something interesting to report on it, to put right. it out there. We can't keep it just because, right. oh, well, he might be upset that we...
And it's icky to see people, you know, like on Twitter, like, oh, check this out, what a blah, 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 you know, but you can't control how people... take things and what they do with them and how they run with them. And you
right.
know, like negative people are always going to see things in a negative light no matter what
right.
is said or done. So, you know,
there well, anyway, is that. There you go. I guess that's the final word. I said briefly, and I think I just, that was like the longest segment we've done. I was like, we can talk briefly
yeah.
about
yeah.
it.
We'll talk very quickly about it.
You lie.
No.
Well, this morning when I woke up and started getting tweets, like we're sort of just seeing tweets not at me about like, oh, you know, PC Gamer did this and this, and now what you get, you know, even though whether or not he said that or whatever, people started reading into things and going like, ooh, bad reporting, question mark? And I'm like, ooh, you know, asking a question is still rhetoric. That,
so, watch your back, Wild.
No, yeah. I think a good...
So I got kind of yeah. freaked out. My heart, my pulse increased, and I was like...
I think a good final word, Tyler, is that I'm still very grateful that you didn't inform me before Lord British left.
Right. Because you wouldn't have wanted to talk to
right,
him
Right, I
about
would not at all
really
have wanted to, like, shake his hand or anything.
I mean...
And so... You know, I'm just still to this day, I'm thankful to you for yeah. sparing me that experience.
Me jumping on the balls of my feet outside the conference
room. And I were like, yeah, standing on the other side of the glass.
Well, you've done what I did. I went in there and I'm like, has anyone seen my contact?
Oh,
I
wow.
I felt the ground
smooth.
Around.
Oh, yeah, oh Lord like, British. Hey.
Hey. Like,
hey.
It's weird that I lost my contact
right.
in this room. And
fancy seeing you here. I was just coming in here to find my.
You would have. Done the same thing if you were so enwrapped in the conversation. I couldn't get out of the conversation. Because actually, and you know, like one last thing I'll say, he's a very personable and talkative and passionate guy. And so he had a lot of other stuff to say, some of which, you know, I want to work into some bigger features. But
for sure.
He by no means came off, you know, maybe as he's being portrayed by some people. He was actually just very talkative. He wanted to talk about his game and his ideas, and of course he does. And
he looks younger than me.
They
that,
were interesting.
That was awkward, to say the least.
Do you think? Yeah.
He's probably immortal.
I don't know. I mean, he does have
two
rat tails.
That's supposed to be like one of the value adds of being Asian, is that you're supposed to, you know, look younger longer, but I don't think I'm really getting
you're
that
comparing
part.
Yourself to Richard Garriott.
That's
yeah,
true.
That's true.
You
that's
can't
true.
Really. Right. I mean, this guy is building a dungeon in his house. So
he's been right. to space.
Yeah, he's been to space.
Which actually just takes some years off.
Oh, by the way, in case you were planning on sleeping soundly tonight, did you know they brought a spider into space?
Wow.
A jumping spider into space on the International Space Station. Oh, I'm sorry. No, they brought two of them, which could have made it. Unfortunately, one died on the trip back, and then the other one lived out the rest of its life.
What?
In
so
the
they've
museum.
Never heard of like Stanley Kubrick, anyone who's made a sci-fi film ever.
Exactly.
That's the worst idea.
What would be the effects of a jumping spider
well,
sting?
I guess. Apparently the idea was like they had a contest, and they said, "Hey, kids, tell us what kind of experiments you want us to do on the International Space Station." And some kids said, "Hey, what about how spiders would track their prey in zero gravity?" So they brought two jumping spiders.
Terrible idea!
A terrible, terrible idea! Two jumping spiders on the ISS.
Hi, I'm Billy, and I want you to unleash hell.
Oh my God! And I guess it's I can't remember her name. Williams, Sunita Williams, I think. Sunita or Sunita. She did the experiment, and she was blogging about it, and. And so, but apparently they did have some interesting results. Like the spiders learned to, I don't want to get into it. You know what? Google
how does
it.
We'll tweet about it later.
Let's take some listener questions.
Right.
Hey, PC Gamer. This is Justin from Arizona. I was wondering where you guys weighed in on the topic of speedruns. I've always personally been incredibly impressed with the creativity of gamers who find ways to subvert game rules in interesting ways. In my opinion, you know, speedruns of a game are sometimes more fascinating than the game itself. So several years ago, I decided to try to complete a speedrun of the original Heretic game. After a few months, I had completed all five of the episodes in about 45 minutes. which I was told by actual speedrunners that this was mediocre at best. But regardless, it was one of the most unbelievably difficult yet incredibly rewarding things I've ever done. The only issue was that during the process of analyzing the levels and enemies and ways to beat the clock, and by running the same routes over and over and over, whatever mystique remained in the original game experience was just totally shattered and ruined. So I was wondering what the good minds of PC Gamer thought about this subculture, and about the idea of speedrunning, and maybe if there are consequences from that. So thanks for the awesome podcast, guys.
Well, you know, I'm not judgmental at all, but I generally don't think that drugs are okay in any situation. They support a subculture that's really violent and that does a lot of damage to societies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And when you run out and someone's like, hey, can you go on a speed run?
Seriously.
Like,
I mean, that's
when
just
you need
like,
it right away that you have to jump in your car.
Oh, you right? guys.
Did you ever see the movie, what was it, District 13?
Yeah.
I think it was District 13. Mm-hmm. It was a French movie,
yeah.
And I think it was like
parkour.
Yeah, it was like sold as like, oh, it's the first like parkour movie, and the first like 5 minutes of the movie, this guy David Bell, who was a big parkour dude back in the day, does just things that are just insane. Like at one point, he runs up a wall, grabs onto the top of a transom, and manages to jump somehow feet first through the transom and land on his feet on the other side of the door. And I thought, you know, that's something I would never have thought a human being could do.
You don't see me come into the office every morning?
It was just, basically it was amazing. The entire opening sequence of that movie was just like, that can be done? What? And that to me is what speedruns are like.
Yeah.
It's like, they are beautiful in and of themselves. What, you know, as to the original game, whatever. I mean, that's just the stage, you know? It's just the things people manage to do blow my mind. I love watching them.
I absolutely love speedruns, too. Some of the more well-known speedruns of older games, such as faster-paced shooters like Quake, are some of the world records held by those players involve actions that are inhuman. I do not understand.
Yeah.
I do not understand how fast of a reaction time this particular player, this particular speedrunner, possessed while he was doing some of these things. I've seen players rocket jump up a wall, turn around, whip out the other gun, rocket jump off the next wall, hit all three enemies while in the air and, you know, sailing across over their heads, go through the door that's opening, and then hit the button. And they're still in the air, by the way. They haven't landed yet.
And when they start using, like, glitches and things, I think that's equally great.
That's
amazing.
That blows my mind every time.
I mean, you can say, oh, well, it doesn't count because you didn't play, but I think if you exploit something that is in the game, be it a glitch
or
not, like, that's awesome.
I agree that it counts. I agree that it takes skill, but I actually have a lot more fun watching no-glitch speedruns.
I like no-glitch speedruns.
I think it's more entertaining to see them do it without, you know, portaling through vertices.
When you're watching a glitch one, you're kind of sitting there waiting for the trick, like, what's going to teleport you to the very end of the game?
But a lot of it doesn't, like,
when they pull it off, you're like, oh, wow, that's still pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Like, those portal speed runs, I can't even tell what's going on. Like, the ones where they glitch through walls and stuff, it's like, I
that's what's amazing.
Yeah. I don't even know what you're doing right now.
One of the most exciting things, though, is reading about a speedrunner's description of what he did to accomplish his run. And there's a few of them that I read that were like, well, then I just did this little glitch that's well known among the community, and, you know, it took me a little while to pull it off. And then when you see it in the video, he like falls through the floor and goes all the way down to the very end of the room while like doing this elaborate sort of interpretive dance to keep himself in the netherworld that's in between the walls so he won't get glitched out.
Unbelievable.
And he just pops into the end of the level, and a level that would normally take 5-10 minutes takes 10 seconds. What?
And exploiting glitches, like, that strikes me as mastery. Mastery of a...
Of knowing every system of the game.
Yeah.
Not just how it was intended. And that's so cool. Like, I don't know if I could ever dedicate myself to a speed run the way these speed runners have. Like, that is like a year or years with a game.
It's
with one
definitely
game.
A craft.
Exploiting
it's a skill.
The glitches, actually, that's the essence of the movie The Matrix. You know, yeah. I mean, really,
you're in the Matrix. You are the one, and you have to get to the end of Sonic Generations.
You're using
really fast.
You're using unsecure code.
You know, I'd rather eat ground glass covered in poison oak than watch ice skating. But the thing is that when if I were to describe how graceful and awesome it is to watch a speed run, it would sound just like when people are talking about like how graceful ice skating is and how beautiful, how athletic and blah blah blah. You know. Meanwhile, I'm trying to like you know saw off my wrists.
How do you not like an activity that involves putting sharp blades on your feet? I don't.
I think
figure skating is great.
Know,
but
it's just all
also, I like hockey.
Hockey,
I'm Canadian, so biased.
Yeah.
But
if you want some
Canada,
if you want to know some PC gamer trivia, I am actually immune to poison ivy and poison oak.
What?
Yep.
Let's test this.
Completely immune. You rub it all over me. I don't care.
Wow.
Yeah.
Neat.
It's one of my weird superpowers.
I've always wanted to rub poisonous plants on TJ.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people do, but it never.
That
never
is, so you've never known the horror of.
No. Well,
it's
we
not
used
fun.
To going full nerd here. I used to be part of a Dagger Here group. You know, which is the foam swords, and you run around a field and hit each other. And we had one battle that apparently took place in a fairly large grove of poison ivy, and I was completely fine, and everyone else was completely screwed by the end of the day.
My sister had the misfortune of going to a beach bonfire, and somebody wasn't paying attention to what they were throwing on the fire.
Oh, goodness.
And so people got it places that, I mean, there were ER visits.
Oh, wow.
Eyes, throat.
Wow, I never thought of hotboxing poison ivy. That's
right.
A bad idea.
Think about that before you go to bed tonight, too.
Thank you.
Along with the aerial spiders.
Jumping spiders, right. Poison ivy,
well,
glass.
Of course, poisonous plants are the next thing they're going to bring up to the ISS.
Yeah, right.
They're just going to kind of let them float
and
around.
Let's give them AI.
This one's carnivorous.
Let's make them sentient. Yeah. So I think we're all pretty much pro speedrun here, right?
Oh yeah,
very
really cool. I mean, I do understand what he's saying about ruining the mystique of a game.
I'd say definitely don't watch a speedrun before you've beaten the game.
You wouldn't get into speedruns, nor do the heavy research required to actually perform a speedrun with while also honoring the the feeling of the game.
It wouldn't be as interesting or evocative, would it? Just to watch a speedrun of a game you didn't. Really know because,
especially with some games where you actually have to stop and watch an event unfold before you, where you waste valuable time, such as Half-Life or BioShock. You can't stop and watch those kind of things unfold. You have to keep moving.
And he's saying it kind of ruined the mystique of the game when he researched it enough to perform his own speedrun. But, of course, I'm sure the mystique was there the first time. And for me, I can never really recapture that first time anyway.
Right.
Yeah. I can't play BioShock again and feel like I did when I played BioShock.
Yeah.
And those speedrunners who have posted some insane times for the games they play, they've played that game so many times that they have to have such a deep love for it.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Right.
Well, speedruns are cool.
They are.
Love them.
Hey, PC Gamer, this is Eric Warner. I'm coming to you from Muncie, Indiana. I just had a question what you guys thought about the emergence of the tablet taking away home PCs becoming less and less popular now. Do you think developers will start making games that are more system, that take more of the system to run since more PC games will be, more PCs at home will be based more on gaming, I would imagine? Or do you think they'll keep it where it's very playable on about anything? Thank you.
I have two questions here.
It sounds like two questions. It's actually one question. What he's actually asking is, since a lot of people that used to buy lower-end PCs to do, like, productivity stuff are now switching to tablets, so a higher percentage of, like, the traditional tower PCs we're seeing now are being used for gaming. Do you think that's going to lead to a difference in the kind of broadness of system specs that games are designed for?
Well, my question was, have you seen the Hudsucker proxy, and is Muncie where they're from?
A
Muncie
I'm
boy.
Not sure.
Anyway, that's unrelated to his question, because he said
everyone,
he was from Muncie.
Everyone is in, like, full, like, Tyler is in full Tyler today, Logan is in full Logan, Omri's in full Omri, like, if you need an archetypical sampling of the personalities of PCG editors, this is a good episode for it.
But what will happen to system specs with non-gaming PCs becoming more powerful? Well, I mean, what happens to system specs, you know, is...
I mean, well, my gut is that it's just going to continue to diversify.
Yeah.
And that's going to have good effects and that's going to have bad effects. You know, ultimately, the way this industry works, it's so complex that nobody can really predict, you know, what could happen because all that's based on stuff we may not even know yet. But here are some sort of signals we're getting from the future, which is that, okay, number one, there's the Razer Edge is on its way out. Now, here you have suddenly a tablet that is a PC. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a first, right? So that's not a first, right? There's Surface RT.
Right.
You know, but does anyone?
you know.
Yeah. I mean, not even Microsoft seems interested in Surface. No, I'm serious, though. No, I don't even hear back from their reps or anything like that.
I see them advertising it, but it's very just kind of, they put the advertising out there and like, it'll sell itself.
But so you've got iPads everywhere and then Android tablets, and suddenly people are like, oh my gosh, these games are selling. I mean, the games are still the number one category on the App Store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they, you know, obviously there's going to be this rush to develop for them and to provide people with the games that they want. But now we have tablets that are actual full PCs, and I've seen Dishonored running at medium settings at 51 frames per second on it.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
And you can, remember, you can not only hold that tablet in your lap and play with the weird controller thingy, or you can pop it into the into a base that hooks into your TV and play it that way if you want, or you can attach it to your monitor. So suddenly that's a possibility. Now will developers say, you know what? Millions and millions of people bought a Razer Edge. Are we going to want to sort of keep our system settings down so we won't tax that kind of system? Yeah, we will definitely want to do that. But that's going to depend on whether or not a lot of people want to buy it.
And I don't necessarily know the answer to the question, but I can tell you my opinion on it is that I love really beautiful graphics. I'm excited to see them. I want to see what the next, you know, engine from Crytek looks like or what it's doing. But I also really like the idea of, you know, going, hey, buddy who doesn't really play PC games, this game is really cool, you should play it. And then he pulls out his computer that he bought and he can play it. Like, that's great to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I know people get upset, like, oh, they're, like, the games just on PC don't look as good because they're being made for consoles and ported over. I don't, to some extent, like, I love new hardware. I love Arma 3. It's just massive worlds, but I also love it when I can share my love with people and they don't have to go, oh, I don't think my PC can do that, or I didn't buy a game on PC. So,
and if it's dependent on that, you know.
So, I mean, I hope that, like, your standard issue consumer PCs, you know, hope the specs do get better and better. And there will always be people like us who go buy the, the GTX Titan or something because we want the best and we want it to be amazing. And we do. We absolutely do. But I also like that, you know, I can just say to my girlfriend, like, you should try playing this game. And because everyone has a PC. It's just the most universal platform. Mm-hmm. And it getting more universal is great, I think. I also want to quote, 2006 Tyler Wilde, who probably said something like, mobile gaming taking off in the U.S. Really? Really?
Just want to show up in a time machine and be like, don't say that again.
So when something like NVIDIA's new thing comes up, I always approach it with skepticism, but then I get skeptical of myself, too, because I'm like, you are the guy who scoffed at mobile gaming in 2006 and said the iPad looked dumb when, like, everyone is using one. That's exciting. And I feel like I'm not even answering the actual question.
I think we pretty much answered it. That no,
it's,
we don't.
It's conjecture.
High-end PCs won't go away.
Those will always be there.
But the benefit is that now more and more people can play good-looking games on their PCs.
It's just widening, and that's a good thing.
Right.
Right. Diversification. Always a good thing.
But there's still going to be the stuff like Metro and Arma that's just going to, you know.
Right.
They want to break the limits of what has been done, and that's always really exciting.
But I also get sort of like, I feel a little weird when I hear that, you know, so much resources are being poured into, oh, we're going to have the most amazing textures and nothing's going to look like this, because, you know, in a year or 2 years, that all that work will just be, so, you know, kind of forgotten, you know? And, yeah. and what you'll remember, you know, you'll remember a few breathtaking moments, the God rays, you know, this yeah. a sunset in whatever.
Grass.
But it's ultimately the gameplay, the characters, the stories.
So when I think back to Mass Effect, I don't think about what the graphics look like in the game. I think yeah. about what the characters look like in my head.
Right.
Like
yeah.
you do
absolutely.
After, after you've read a novel or something, you know, you can picture scenes. I picture scenes in Mass Effect not how they looked, but what was happening. The Normandy in my head is this just amazing. I don't care how it was rendered in the game.
Right.
It's something totally different in my head. And then, like, I can picture scenes from, like, Zork, text yeah. Zork, and, like, those scenes are in my head. That house and that mailbox, that's a scene in my head.
Oh, man.
I can see it.
Wow. That takes me back.
Granted, they did put a lot of work on the font rendering, and that I don't remember any of that. I don't know what font. But, I don't know. I like games that look neat because it's a spectacle, but...
So, rolling right on into playlists, what neat-looking games have you guys been playing this week? Tyler.
I have been playing so much SimCity. over 100 hours since it released, which some of that is because I reviewed it and we've been covering it because there's been so much to talk about, as we discussed. But some of that is because, like, it's... hard game to pull yourself away from. I know people have been criticizing certain flaws in the simulation, and they are there, and those are in my review. But still, there is something about the SimCity formula, and they still managed to capture that one essence that like makes it really hard for me to walk away from a game of SimCity, because I get to that point where I'm building up a city, and I have a goal. You know, I want to. This is going to be an electronics manufacturing city. And then a problem comes up, and it's like, oh, no, I need to make some more money to fix my fire station coverage or whatever, and I'll be like, I'm just going to play till I fix this. I want to get my city stable. But then in the process of doing that, it's like, there's not enough low-wealth jobs. I'm like, I'll keep playing until I fix that problem. And then, you know, it's 4 a.m. and
right.
then, you know, it's
yeah.
whelp.
Yep.
And I really have to tell myself, like, you hit escape. Hit escape, press quit. And then, like, once it's closed and it's, like, back to my desktop, it's like, the spell's broken. I'm like, yeah. oh, I'm not going to do that again. And then, like, the next night, I'm like, I'll just pop in for a minute and just kind of mess around. And then again.
Yep.
And they did just actually release a patch for some of the traffic problems. Like, there's kind of this illogical traffic jams occurring in the yeah. game because of some poor pathfinding. I understand why the pathfinding is really simple, because they're simulating thousands of
right.
these things, but it was pretty bad to the point where as soon as you hit like 100K residents, suddenly your whole city's a gridlock, and you're like, why? I've been playing with the new patch version, and I'm still having trouble identifying exactly how much it's changing things. I'm still kind of running into some traffic problems, so I don't think I can keep playing it for at least a little while. I've just banned myself from starting it. And I want to move on to a certain game.
So you want it tonight?
See you there tonight.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, pretty soon I'll be moving on to a game of infinite possibilities.
Oh boy.
So I'm just gonna sit back for a weekend and just be ready to, because GDC is next week, so we're going to be super yeah. busy at the same time the game we all just want to stay up all night
How
playing
How could they
is released.
Do that? How could they...
It was deliberately malicious.
A very yeah. small percentage
Ken
of
Levine. That's the perp. That's the guy we should go after.
You yeah. must choose.
And we should
PC
see him
gamer.
Next week, too, and at GDC. Oh, man.
Let's poison oak in the bonfire.
It's like he knows all his game developers.
I'll do it.
Run,
because I'm immune. Yeah. I'll be the guy to drop it in there.
Like, all his game developer friends who are there doing panels and stuff must be even more pissed than us, because... Yeah.
That's cold.
I'll do a Princess Bride thing, or I put poison oak in one of these cups, but I'm immune to poison oak, so mm-hmm. whichever one uh-huh. he drinks, Ken Levine is screwed. That's how it's going to go down.
And this also happened with Mass Effect, and it's happening again with Bioshock, where my girlfriend will say, like, hey, you know, I really care about you, but can I just not see you for a week?
I really care about you. And that's when she uses her foot to close the door.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And it's
I'll see you later.
But it's totally understandable, and I agree with you. Like, it's a game we both want to play. And we just, when we were playing Mass Effect 3, we really felt like we couldn't have a conversation because we both wanted to talk about it, but we didn't know where the other was.
Right.
We didn't want to spoil it. So we're just like, you know what? This is stupid. It's we're having to force ourselves to talk about things we don't want to be talking about. We want to talk about Mass Effect. So
you're
let's
one
just,
spoiler away from
you know
a breakup.
What? You know what, though?
So let's just separate until we're done, and then we can talk about it and move on. And
all of the podcast listeners right now, though, who don't have gamer girlfriends are going, oh, well, boo-hoo for you,
Tyler. Oh, that's true. Yeah, you didn't earn any points there. Sorry about that.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to brag. She's pretty great. Hi, honey, if you're listening.
Oh, boy.
That's okay. She doesn't listen.
Oh, man. Yeah. Logan, what have you been playing?
Okay, well, I just started a game I have been waiting for infinitely long, it seems like. Mm. Now, I can't say,
oh, that's
you know,
cool, so you're playing it now.
Much of a...
All right, that's fine.
You know, I don't want to... You know, our review is coming up right around the corner, but here's what strikes me at the very beginning. You know, I actually was... I sat there like a kid with these giant Coke bottle eyes, you know, during the opening, like, not even the credits, but during the setup screens.
Wow.
I'm like, you know, and I'm thinking, and I realized that while it was, do you remember
magic.
When I was setting it up on the PC?
And
I was just sitting
this.
There, when is it going to finish? And then when it started up, I'm like, and I thought, you know, this is what happens when you build up that trust and you build up that reputation and you bring gamers into the development process and you prove to them over and over again, look, I'm going to give you this experience and now I'm primed and I'm ready for it. And I hope it lives up to my expectations. Even more so, I hope it is different than my expectations in many ways and surprising. And if BioShock, you know, and System Shock were any example, then yes, it's going to have surprises. It's going to have revelations, and that's what a lifetime of hard work earns you. You know what I mean? Is that belief and that good faith mm-hmm. that people have? And you know what? If it was a totally disappointing experience, I'd be like, oh, that's too bad. I was really looking forward to that. But what can you do next? Let's see. You know.
Yeah.
There's that.
And ideally, if it were disappointing, it would be because Irrational Levine tried something really...
Absolutely.
Really crazy and
yes.
ambitious, and it didn't work.
Yes.
And then you can go, like, I'm really disappointed, but I see what you were trying to do. I hope you can do that.
Right.
Versus a game that's disappointing because, you know, whatever, it was rushed or, you know, it just
right.
wasn't thought out. But we know he's going to... We trust and know that he's going to think out, and Irrational, the whole team, is going to think out their ideas and try interesting things, so... I think we're forgiving sometimes when things fail, when it was a valiant effort.
And that's, you know, is that not a working definition of an industry leader? Somebody
Absolutely.
Who's pushing things ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, you earn your credibility, you earn respect, you earn good faith and belief.
And the way I feel about BioShock Infinite is that I want to, like, go to this wine store down the street and get, like, a really nice bottle and have like 6 hours ahead of me where I don't have to do
yeah,
anything.
Yeah,
right,
that's
right, right.
Or talk
down.
To your girlfriend.
I want to kind of lower the, you know, and just kind of like be there with it. And it can be my girlfriend for.
It's awesome to
you
do a review, you know,
I'll
because you get to play it first.
Well.
But not doing the review can really be amazing.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to like savor every minute. I mean, you just sit there and just not even play sometimes, you just look. You know, just
the same thing
stuff.
Happened with Mass Effect 3. There were just been times where I'm just like, wow, something just happened. I'm just going to look at it now and think about that, which is
just
no great
deadlines.
When a game
it's
can do
nothing.
That.
Nothing. Yeah, you reflect. So, yeah, that's what I'm up to this weekend. And then GDC, holy moly.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's coming.
Logan's body is ready.
What has your body been ready for this week?
My body has been eagerly anticipating a game that has seemingly taken an infinite time
we're running
to come
out of,
okay.
We're running out of
All right.
jokes here.
I wanted to just continue the chain, but I'm terrible at that kind of stuff.
It's going to be a real shock to your system.
There you go.
Releases.
See, I should have just given it to the master over there. So,
I even worked in System Shock.
Yes.
So. Yeah, there you go.
So anyway, I've been busy continuing on my Assassin's Creed replay. Still on number one. Still knocking over jar carriers and pitching archers off roofs. Other than that, I've actually jumped back into Clive Barker's Undying, which has shown up on GOG.
Oh, well done.
I completely forgot, much to my unfortunate pair of pants, how scary that game is. How absolutely horrifically scary that game is.
And you still feel that way, even though the graphics are kind of dated at
this graphics point? Are a little dated, yes, but it's just, first of all, I am a total weenie.
Oh, okay.
I anything will scare me. I'm very squeamish, and of course...
Did you make it through Amnesia?
No.
Okay.
I've never beaten Amnesia, ever.
It is a scary game,
yeah.
and it's not just the jump scares; it's the creeping dread.
That's the more powerful.
I
scare
love creeping dread.
It creeps everywhere. It's got these little tiny feet, and it's all
like spiders in space. Kind
yeah,
of.
Exactly. I know. They just float into your head like that.
And am I correct? I could swear that I remember that every time you start Undying New. That it generates a new map. Do you remember if that's... I'm 95% sure that's true.
I believe so.
Can replay it, and then so the layout will be different, but the characters and the goals will be the same.
The story stays the same
right.
along with the characters, and I do believe the levels do change every time you start
right,
a new
which
game.
Is a pretty neat trick.
Yeah, and it's, in the setting that it gives you, it's rather unsettling because it's like... Oh, okay, well, I guess I'll try it again and try something new. Wait a minute, this hallway wasn't set up this way. Wait a minute, this room doesn't look the way it was before. What's going on here? And I don't know. It's...
Wait, and what is that dread creeping? Oh, my goodness, it is.
Yes. Yeah. That's definitely...
Is that dread around the corner?
Yeah.
That can't be. I'm going to go look.
Yeah. It is dread. All right.
Oh, dread.
Come on.
No,
$6 too.
Dread.
You know?
It is, yeah. It is a great, great deal, and I really recommend picking it up if you've never played it before or if you were waiting to pick it up again for cheap.
Actually, that reminds me is like that's one of the things that's really got me excited about stuff like Shield and is the, hoping that they, will port games like Undying over to Android.
Of course.
And then be able to play those again, and just in bed, or on the toilet where you don't have to worry about,
Right. That's where I get most of my mobile gaming done.
Yeah. Problem solved. Step one taken care of.
Everyone does.
It was not dignified.
It's also where I read Twitter, by the way. So
there you go.
If you're wondering where I'm typing at replies to you from,
yeah.
He's on the crapper again.
Just picture that every single time you read a tweet from Tyler Wilde.
TJ.
Yeah, I have been playing just a crap load of StarCraft II, single player and multiplayer. I'm playing back through the Wings of Liberty campaign again, so I haven't touched the Heart of the Swarm campaign yet. I'm on like the very last mission of Wings of Liberty.
Do you dream of Raynor?
I do dream of Raynor. I actually had a dream about that I was playing Bioshock Infinite, and if that dream was any indication, it's going to be pretty awesome, but also very weird and nonsensical. So I've also jumped into the multiplayer more than I have since probably the beta for Wings of Liberty, which was, holy crap, 2010, like April, May 2010, I think. And unranked play is awesome. Like, it used to be that I have such bad ladder anxiety that if I know my ladder ranking is on the line, I could barely put up with the stress of 3 games a day, and now I'm playing, like, 4 to 6 games a day, and if I lose, it's, like, whatever. So, definitely liking that a lot. Still playing Planescape Torment, which I am also thoroughly enjoying, and has kind of the same thing you guys were talking about with older games, where, like, when I get to a really cool scene in Planescape Torment, and I play through it, and I'm thinking about it later, I'm not really seeing, like, the late 90s, early 2000s isometric, sprites and stuff. I have a much, more filled out idea in my head of how it played out, even considering I'm playing it in the era of the modern realistic graphics we have now.
Do you think that can, maybe it didn't in this case, but do you think that can kind of, like, shatter an illusion when you go back to an old game and it like you see it again and you're like, but that's not what's in my head? Are you experiencing that at
it
all?
It can. Mm-hmm. Like, that definitely happened to me with like the original StarCraft and with Warcraft 2, going back and replaying those somewhat recently. But then what sticks in my mind when I think back on it is the the imagination part of it. I don't remember I forgot how bad this game looks. I still remember it as you know.
What gets me though, I don't care that but that what the graphics look like. What gets me are when the controls, you can't remap them to something a little more.
That's one of the worst. There are a lot of classic games now that are just not up to the control standard or the interface standards that we have today.
It's funny too that I was totally okay with it then.
Back then I was like, well, this is how I play games.
Yeah. How else would I play games?
Yeah.
It just goes to show that if you don't know there's an alternative, often you'll accept what's in front of you.
Right.
Yeah.
But like we have Resident Evil 2. What? People don't rotate in place when they move? What?
That's how I walk around. Yeah. I just, turn in place and then walk forward.
Yeah.
If you'd like to share with us what you've been playing or any other questions or comments, you can give us a call at our podcast call-in line, which is 1-877-404-1337, extension 724. You can also send an MP3 or other manageably sized audio file to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com. And for the whole crew here in the PCG studio, we will talk to you guys again next week.
See ya.
Laters. I am sorry about that, everybody. I should have just kept that between Tyler and myself. But
just imagine their little legs in zero G.
That's just so not cool. I used to support science.
Yeah.
And now
I just shivered uncontrollably.
The space program is monstrous.
But isn't that trippy to think like this tiny little delicate thing, even though it's a monster,
went to space?
Yeah, and then
and
survived like the, well, one of them. The trip back, you would like. I always thought it was like this super, you know, and you're under all these.
You ever had a spider in the bathtub, and you're like, "I'll get rid of you with the shower," and it just clings on.
Oh, right, that's true. That's true.
They're resilient.
Right, they are.
Yeah, you're like, "I'll turn up the," you know, and this.
Then you eventually have to touch them with your own hands to get them.
Whoops, sorry about that.
To get them to move.
And you know, if they had middle fingers, they'd be all like, you know, take that.